From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, January 14th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Douglas Ridge, a new eco-conservation subdivision in Brunswick, dedicated to nature-centric sustainable home design. More at douglasridge.com.
Maine's child welfare system's made progress, but it's still struggling in the wake of the abuse deaths of Marissa Kennedy and Kendall Chick 2 years ago. That's according to the latest report from the state's Child Welfare Services Ombudsman. As Patty White reports, the ombudsman identified two key areas that need improvement.
In her fiscal year 2019 report, Maine Child Welfare Services Ombudsman Christine Alberi says she opened more than 100 child welfare cases for review and identified issues in more than three dozen. Those issues primarily centered around two critical decisions: whether a child is safe in their home and whether a child will be safe when they're reunified with their parents.
Keep in mind, you know, the majority of the cases were handled well. It's just that the problem is the stakes are so high when some are not able to be done as they should be, you know, it can have pretty serious consequences.
Alberi's report highlighted examples in which the state's Department of Health and Human Services either failed to recognize or disregarded evidence of risk. In one instance, a case remained open for assessment for 5 months until an infant sustained life-threatening and lifelong injuries. The ombudsman says DHHS has implemented changes that could help, but that more training is needed to ensure staff can successfully apply new tools and policies to keep children safe. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Advocates for seniors are urging support for a bill that would establish a state-run retirement system in Maine. The chief architect of the Democratic bill is Mark Ivry of the Brookings Institution. Speaking at a news conference at the State House, Ivry said the bill is designed for private sector employees who don't have an easy way to save for retirement.
Let the employees use their payroll system as a conduit. The employees' own money out of their own pay gets saved in the employees' own individual account.
Ivry says several states have implemented similar retirement programs. According to AARP Maine, more than 235,000 private sector workers in Maine don't have access to a retirement plan through their employers. And Governor Mills today announced new, more generous rebates that became available this month for the installation of heat pumps. Mills has set a goal of 100,000 heat pump installations in Maine by 2025. In weather tonight, light snow or a mix with lows in the high single digits to the high 20s. Tomorrow, a mix of sun and clouds with highs in the low 20s to the mid 40s. A new report's proposing sweeping changes in the way Maine's tribes interact with state government. The findings come from a task force charged with reviewing the landmark 1980 Indian Land Claims Act. Mal Leary has our report.
The nearly 300-page report details conflicts that have arisen over competing interpretations of the Settlement Act. It also lays out how the act has resulted in Maine tribes being treated differently than most of the nation's Native Americans, with limited powers of self-determination. The premise of the 1980 federal law was the tribes would give up their claim to land for cash and recognition from the federal government. But the relationship with the state is more like a municipality than a sovereign government. That's something the tribes want to change. Democratic Representative Donna Bailey of Saco co-chaired the task force.
The recommendations are pretty consistent in that we are recommending that the Maine tribes move towards being more in line with the other tribes across the country.
The 22 recommendations include establishing a process for tribal-state collaboration and alternative dispute resolution, recognizing the jurisdiction of tribal courts over certain criminal and juvenile offenses committed on tribal lands, implementing the tribe's authority to exercise jurisdiction under the Federal Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act, and giving tribes the right to regulate fishing and hunting by non-tribal citizens on tribal lands. The task force also recommends that the tax laws be changed so that tribal members making money on tribal lands will not be subject to state income taxes, and products sold on tribal land will not be subject to the state sales tax. Already, the sweeping changes are generating concern from members of the Judiciary Committee. The most controversial seems to be a provision that would place Maine tribes under the Federal Indian Gaming Act, which could result in the establishment of tribal casinos that would compete with the two that are already in place. Democrat Barbara Cordon represents Bangor, where Hollywood Slots is located.
That casino not only employs a lot of people in my district, but it is a significant part of the tax base for the city of Bangor. But there's so many other issues here.
The Judiciary Committee plans to hold a day-long public hearing on the recommendations next month. Some members say the complexity of the proposals may be too much to take up in a session scheduled to end in April. But several committee members suggested that those with broad support should go to the full legislature for its consideration this session, while others could be delayed. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The Maine Department of Transportation released a three-year work plan that includes more than 2,000 projects worth nearly $2.6 billion. It also contains something else, a plea to state lawmakers to help the department fill a project backlog spurred by higher construction costs, workforce shortages, and chronic underfunding. As Steve Missler reports, the cry for more money is nothing new, but it's increasingly desperate as MDOT officials issue dire warnings of a slow march toward a system failure.
The driveway and parking lot at Maine DOT's North Augusta facility is pocked with potholes, some temporarily patched up but deteriorating, and at least one large enough to bottom out a small car. It was a fitting venue for Tuesday's press conference, in which Maine DOT Commissioner Bruce Van Note repeatedly emphasized a message that's woven throughout the agency's new 280-page work plan.
I'm not one for hyperbole, and I'm not one to use the word crisis. It's just not how I'm wired. We're engineers by nature. We just address what we have. But this level of funding is not sustainable.
Sustainable funding for Maine's sprawling network of state highways, bridges, railways, and ports has been an issue for years. It's been exacerbated by a combination of statehouse politics and new challenges brought by newer, fuel-efficient, and electric cars that have diminished the gas tax revenues that help fund Maine's transportation system. The MDOT has pressed for more federal one-time grants, and Maine voters have approved hundreds of millions of dollars in transportation bonds. But Van Note says it's still not enough.
Maine DOT is essentially a great machine that knows how to produce good work at a good price, but we are running low on fuel.
The department's three-year work plan spends $150 million more dollars than its predecessor, but on 142 fewer projects. And some of those projects are like the pothole patches in its own North Augusta parking lot, temporary solutions that are labeled as such in the work plan.
Here are the titles: light capital paving, ultra-thin wearing surface. What are we doing? We're taking that peanut butter pavement and spreading it as thin as we can to get as many miles going, to hold it together.
Van Note describes the work plan as managing a slow decline in Maine's transportation system. It contains 148 bridge projects and 171 miles of highway construction and rehabilitation, as well as funding for other projects. But it also relies on an uncertainty, $300 million in bonding over the next 3 years that must first be approved by the legislature, and then Maine voters. And even if that bonding occurs, the work plan has a $230 million project shortfall. A special transportation task force has proposed adding taxes and fees, which are unpopular with some lawmakers. Paul Cazell, president of CPM Construction in Freeport, served on the task force and says he doesn't understand that position.
Many of these same folks fail to appreciate the urgency and immediacy of this problem and do not have the political courage to take the necessary steps to resolve this funding shortfall.
Maine isn't the only state confronting the transportation funding problem, but other states have moved faster to address it. Since 2013, 27 states have increased gas taxes or added long-term funding sources, according to a database published by the National Conference of State Legislatures. Maine's last gas tax increase was in 2011, the same year the Republican-controlled legislature eliminated indexing that hikes the gas tax with inflation. And the prospect of an increase during an election year appears unlikely, leaving Maine DOT Chief Bruce Van Note calling for what he describes as a nonpartisan solution. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation about cleaning up clutter in your digital life. I'm Nora Flaherty.